This is Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matters. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. The AMA is a global leader in professional development and education, improving the immediate performance and long-term growth of individuals and organizations. Check us out on our website, www.amanet.org. For an entrepreneur who has devoted their life to building their business, there are fewer prospects as scary and as exciting as selling that business. Rick Rickertsen takes on this challenge in his new book, Sell Your Business Your Way, Getting Out, Getting Rich, and Getting On With Your Life, published by Amacom Books. Rick's book walks readers through the entire process of selling, from valuation and preparing the business for sale to finding a buyer and assembling and closing the deal. He also addresses some often overlooked concerns, including managing the emotional issues that can undermine business and financial decisions. Rick Rickertsen is the managing partner of Pine Creek Partners, a $50 million private equity fund with the goal of backing entrepreneurial executives in management buyout transactions. The critical first step, you say, is to be clear about goals. Don't most entrepreneurs just want the biggest payoff possible? I mean, what other factors should they consider?
You know, that's an excellent question, and it's very interesting. A lot of entrepreneurs don't have price as the top goal. Many entrepreneurs, if a business has been in a family for a long time or if they're the founder, they might well have a goal of maintaining the continuity of their company or the continuity of their brand. And they might like to turn their business over to their employees, for example, on some basis, who have normally served them well, or turn their company over to their management team to run it. And in the case of those types of transactions, they might not get top dollar for the business, but they might be able to maintain the integrity of the business they've built. Other entrepreneurs do just want to maximize price when they sell a business, and that is absolutely their right. But you'd be surprised how many folks have an interest in preserving a legacy rather than just getting top dollar.
You also advise planning for the sale years in advance. What should sellers do before presenting their business to prospective buyers?
Well, it's so important to plan well in advance when you're looking to sell your company. The sale process takes a long time. It's the most important transaction that a business owner ever conducts. And it's always amazing to me how business owners don't take the time to put things in place. Just a few of the subpoints on that in a relatively complex area. Number one is a business owner should get audited financials a couple years in advance. It's shocking to me how many business owners elect to not pay the small amount of incremental money to get their financials audited rather than just have a light review of financials done. And then they get penalized when they sell the company if they don't have audited numbers. So that is one thing. Another thing that's very important a couple years in advance is to try to make sure that you lower any customer concentration issues you might have in your business. And just to say that another way, if you've got one customer who represents 30 or 40% of your sales, when it comes time for you to sell your company, you're really going to get cut on your valuation because you have real dominance with one customer. It's so important when you sell your business to really put the hat on of the buyer and really think about this from a buyer's perspective. And buyers do not like to buy companies that have very, very dominant customers because that just creates a lot of risk. And then the last thing I would say briefly is that it's a little bit counterintuitive, but entrepreneurs would do well a couple years in advance of selling to make themselves as unimportant in the business as possible. To create and build a good management team around you in the couple years before selling, because buyers don't like to buy companies that are really dependent on one or two people. It just creates a lot of risk.
When selling a house, it's usually relatively easy to find comparable homes in one's neighborhood and figure out an appropriate price.
Yeah.
But businesses are far more complex and they're unique.
Yeah.
Now, your book lays out precisely how to determine an asking price. What are the basics that entrepreneurs need to know?
When it comes time for you to sell your business, I think it's important for you to have an investment advisor or investment banker help you with looking at things. And one of the key parts of their job on your behalf is to look at other prior transactions that have happened in your industry. And in any industry of any size, there will always be other deals that have happened, if you will, where your advisor can help you peg the value of your business based on other transactions that have happened. Now, all of that said, there are very standard metrics that buyers look at when they're valuing companies. And nearly every situation, the value of the business can be pegged to a multiple of the company's annual cash flow. So if you have a company, suppose, that does $5 million of sales and $1 million of annual cash flow, then you will get paid a value of that annual cash flow. And depending on the type of your industry you're in, it might be as low as 4 times cash flow. It could be as high as 8 or 9 times cash flow. And it kind of really, on average, settles in the middle range there, where most businesses are worth between 5 and 6 times annual cash flow.
For many business owners, the bottom line question is how to find a buyer. You write about one business owner who had offers from 2 very different buyers, a large corporation and an entrepreneurial competitor, and another business owner who sold to a group of investors as part of a roll-up of 5 different companies. Where should an entrepreneur look for buyers? And tell us about buyers to avoid.
The 2 major camps of buyers are strategic buyers and financial buyers. And just briefly on those 2 pieces, strategic buyers are other corporations who already have some type of interest in your industry. And it may very well be a competitor of yours who wants to buy your business, or it could be a customer or a supplier who already is participating in that industry. Or it could be an overseas corporation that wants to get a footprint in the U.S. market. Those are your groups of strategic buyers. Separately, you've got your financial buyers. Now, the financial buyer industry has gotten huge in the U.S., this industry that you read about all the time and called private equity, which has become so important and so powerful in the overall financial markets, is a huge buyer of businesses. They're the biggest now, frankly. And so you're typically, when you're going to sell your business, you're either going to the strategic buyers or the financial buyers or to both. And managing that process is relatively complex and very time-consuming, which is one of the key reasons that you want to hire one of these business brokers or bankers to represent you in that process. One of the case studies that I wrote about in the book was a business owner who got so distracted with the sale process that his company started performing badly, and he never ended up selling his business because the company started to perform poorly and the buyer walked away. So that's another good reason to have a good advisor. Buyers to avoid, boy, it's very important to avoid buyers with whom you are not comfortable. It really is like a marriage of sorts when you sell your business to someone else, and you've got to be very, very comfortable with your buyer. And one of the things I always tell business owners to do is make sure you have your lawyer do a little litigation search, for example, on your prospective buyer, because you really don't want to get into this kind of partnership with somebody who's highly litigious, for example. Make sure you do a little background check. Make sure you do reference checks on your potential buyers to make sure that they are the kind of people you want to work with. And if you don't have a good feeling in your stomach about these prospective buyers, you should be walking away.
Let's come back to Leo Mullen, the entrepreneur you mentioned before. In regards to the next chapter in an entrepreneur's life, what happens after the sale? Now, you write about Leo. After selling his business, he was driving himself and his family crazy until they decided he would start a new company.
Yeah.
What's your advice for a successful transition after the sale? I mean, do most of these entrepreneurs start new ventures? Do many stay involved with their companies after the deal is complete? What do they do?
It's very, very interesting. It's really quite fascinating, and it's a little bit entertaining even. But again, one of the things is just so important for the entrepreneur to think about, why am I selling my business? Exactly. What specifically are my goals? Now, most people, to your question, end up like Leo, which is that Leo was at home. He read all the books he wanted to read. He got in perfect physical condition. He was driving his wife crazy being around the house. And a year into his great retirement that he thought he was going to enjoy so much, he found himself putting a whiteboard on the wall in his office and sketching out the plan for his next company. And now at this point in time, Leo is well along. He started another wonderful company, and he's been building that business up. And I know that Leo, since I talked to him, is thinking about selling that one too. And this is the standard pattern where these folks really have entrepreneurialism in their blood, and they love the thrill of building the business from scratch and competing and hiring people. And then they find when it gets to a certain size that they get really itchy, they get bored, they sell their business, and they end up coming back and starting another company again later. So important to think about it well in advance, just to make sure that you don't have that great regret of having built that company, and all of a sudden, the entrepreneur, you find you're not in the battle anymore, you're not in the game, and you got money in the bank, but what is that really doing for your quality of life? Sure, it's helpful, but intellectually, it's not very interesting, and the folks really find themselves struggling to find a new place in the world. So it's very interesting, and it requires real sitting quietly. You know, a great entrepreneur friend of mine advocates something that I'm a big fan of, which is go away one weekend a year to some place that you like, go away by yourself, and lay out your 1, 3, and 5-year goals, and just map out where you're trying to go with your life. I think it's a great exercise that everybody should try.
The author is Rick Rickertsen. The book is Sell Your Business Your Way, Getting Out, Getting Rich, and Getting On With Your Life, published by Amacom Books. Thanks, Rick.
Terrific. Have a great day.
It's time for You've Been Spotted, where we interview random people who are attending a workshop or seminar at one of our 5 executive conference centers. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. And now here's Kevin Lee.
What are we going to do? We're going to sell the business. What I'm doing here is I am offering these alternatives in descending order of desirability. Sell the business at the lower of, number one, what we paid for. Number two.
The AMA has several courses that are of interest to small business owners and executives. One of them is Fundamentals of Financial Analysis, which I am visiting today to see what people are getting from the course.
Okay, my name is Phil Woolhar. I've been doing courses for AMA for almost 15 years now, and the one I principally do is 1552 AMA's course on financial analysis. One of my personal biases is behind every good, solid financial person is a CEO waiting to jump out. I didn't say CFO, I said a CEO. And so what we try to do is not only the analysis and the techniques used to be able to understand a company and make more informed decisions, but have people bridge the gap between the analysis and the decision-making role, and to practice making those kinds of decisions and applying the analytical part of all this into a decision-making, value-adding role.
I'm in the utility industry, and we're facing a lot of important decisions regarding what types of fuel we're going to buy, what types of plants we're going to build, how we're going to take care of both our environmental and our financial stewardship to our ratepayers.
And the instructor was absolutely wonderful. He was very detailed, and he gave us very basic examples that stayed with us. Ridiculous examples, but that's what stays with us.
Well, one of the examples I like to give has to do with what was talked about in the 90s as the absolute greatest thing since sliced bread. It's called EVA. And that stands for economic value added. And the basic principle is as follows. Now, Kevin told me he banks at Bank of America. He told me he has a Bank of America Visa card. I asked him if he was going to go to work on Thursday. He said he was. I said, Kevin, do me a favor. Take your Visa card, go over to the nearest branch of the Bank of America, and go in, and the first person you see wearing a suit back there where they have the mahogany paneling, ask that person to give you a $1,000 cash advance on your Visa card. Then when they give you the $1,000, I want you to walk across the lobby of the bank to the first teller you see and say to that teller, please put this $1,000 in my savings account. And then I want you to call me at the end of the year and tell me how well you did. If you pay 19.8% for money and you invested at 3%, do you think you're going to have a good deal, good year? I don't think so. And that's what economic value added is. It says whatever the cost of money is, your mission in life is to take that money and go out and invest it at a rate of return above that.
The course is very, very comprehensive. Everything is covered over a short period of time, but at the same time, everything is learned. You go over everything and it's understood, and then we move on. And basically, in a shorter course, you're not able to get all of the information in. You're not able to retain it, that's for sure.
If we can take all the analytical stuff, all the nuts and bolts of the ratios and the discounted cash flow techniques and articulate that in a clear and convincing way to help people make better decisions, then financial people are playing a very valuable role to their organization, and they're earning the right to have positions of greater responsibility, and hopefully they'll be CEO one day. I'd like to see everybody get promoted.
We'd love to get your feedback, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. One of our listeners will receive either a $200 discount on an AMA seminar or a free book from AMACOM, a division of the American Management Association. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.